meeting will come to order. Welcome, everybody. Today we have a couple of bills on the... Well, actually, first of all, we have a couple of bills to introduce here while we still have our quorum. Council, would you read the measures to be introduced?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. LC 119, relating to crime, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee at the request of Joanne and Ron Johnson in memory of their daughter, Carrie Rep, and the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence and the Oregon District Attorneys Association. LC 2125, relating to domestic relations, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. LC 2154, relating to damages, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. LC 2155, relating to courts, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. LC 2157, relating to crime, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. LC 2158, relating to juveniles, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. LC 2159, relating to crime, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. And LC 2160, relating to the Oregon Youth Authority, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. LC 2161, relating to marriages, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. LC 2162, relating to the Department of Corrections, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. And finally, LC 2255, relating to courts, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee.
Senator Pozanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we introduce all of the LCs that Council has just noted on the record as committee bills from Judiciary.
Thank you. Senator Pozanski has moved the aforementioned LCs to be introduced as Judiciary Committee bills. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pozanski.
I believe one of the ones the council said it was 2255 or 54. I didn't see that one. That's the only one I'm assistant going through.
Madam Chair, Senator Pozanski, I read 2251.
Okay.
Relating to courts.
Was that the last in
numeric?
That was
numeric? The it was not. It is the last in numeric order.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Now we have a public hearing. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 240, creating council. You can tell us what it's creating.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 240 actually is staffed by Mr. Taylor, and I'm going to defer to him on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 240 creates the Criminal Justice Research and Policy Institute within the Mark Hatfield School of Government, directs the institute to assist state and local governments in developing policies to reduce crime and delinquency through research, analysis, and information dissemination. It's modeled on the Washington State Policy Institute, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you, Council. And we have signed up Representative Chip Shields. Would you like to start off, Chip? Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chip Shields. I'm the founder and former executive director of Better People, a largely privately funded nonprofit whose mission is to dramatically reduce recidivism, offenders returning to crime in Multnomah County and other areas. I'm also state representative representing District 43 in Northeast Portland. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 240 and its conceptual amendments that will be discussed shortly. For over 14 years, I've been working to increase public safety, and I believe that the paucity of nonpartisan, independent public safety research has severely hampered the legislature's ability to fund things that work and to defund things that don't. As you may recall, Senate Bill 240 was Senate Bill 16 last session. It had been promoted by Senator John Minnis and was passed out of committee with the due pass recommendation. Senate Bill 240 will create an independent, nonpartisan Criminal Justice Research and Policy Institute at Portland State University. The independent nature of this institute is what's critical and what is currently missing in Oregon's research capacity. The institute created in Senate Bill 240 will have a 10-person board with members appointed from both parties and all branches of government. The nonpartisan nature of the board will add legitimacy to the research process and help ensure that the research developed by the institute is actually used by the legislature. On Friday, Ways and Means heard a presentation entitled Legislating for Results. The presenter from Florida said it well when he said that the state legislature's key responsibility is to get the best results for citizens with the resources available. He said legislators need to know whether policies are working. He said evaluation capacity within the legislature is critical because agencies generally don't come forward with failures. And executive branch evaluation, he said, their data can often be spun, and I agree. On page 2 of my testimony, you will see some research from the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. Page 2. Wouldn't it be helpful to those to have these kinds of cost-benefit analyses on Oregon programs and policies? I think so. The conceptual amendments that I referenced earlier will remove the funding mechanism for Senate Bill 240, which originally, is written by Senator Minnis in previous sessions, was to be funded through criminal fees and assessments. My understanding is that Ben DeHaan will be talking about some conceptual amendments that will pull the funding mechanism out, so this won't actually have a cost to the legislature for now. Where they will find their funding is from federal sources, places like the National Institute of Justice, private foundations, etc. But we can get the board appointed now and get the process moving forward. And at this critical point of Oregon's history, I believe that every criminal justice policy should meet a two-part test. It must increase public safety, and it must save taxpayer dollars. SB 240 and its conceptual amendments will accomplish both. That is why I urge you to vote yes on Senate Bill 240 once it is amended. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Shield, I like this idea, but why is it PSU? Why is it going to Portland State?
Senator Walker, you're out of order.
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, I believe that a part of the equation is because the Hatfield School of Government is at Portland State University, and I think people have thought that that would be a very good fit because the Administration of Justice Department is located in the Hatfield School of Government.
Mm. All right. I'll take that answer. Thank you. You know, Madam Chair, I just have to fill in Representative Shields. He wasn't here last session. We had a little bit of turf wars about what Portland State got and what the University of Oregon got in terms of some issues. And we actually worked on a very fair alliance regarding alternative dispute resolution. And that got divided up pretty equally between the two schools. And so, you know, I just have to watch out for my alma mater and wonder why things keep going to Portland. But
Actually, Senator Walker, to clear up the record, the U of O got a bigger share of the program and the budget. But we will not air our turf wars in public here. Yes,
Madam Chair, Senator Walker. What I do know also is that the Administration of Justice Department and this Policy Institute will work very closely with the Oregon Social Learning Center.
Madam Chair, you just made yourself a gold star with that one. And, Representative, that is an excellent center, what they do, and I appreciate that you're going to utilize them. And I have to commend you. I don't know if every member of this committee is aware, but Representative Shields has been very involved in transitional services for offenders, and I just think that's very neat programs. We have one in Eugene that Senator Prezansky and I love dearly, sponsors, and I think it's one of the best ways to keep people from going back to prison. And I want to thank you and acknowledge you for your work on that.
Chair, Senator Walker, thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions or comments from the committee? Thank you very much for coming. We have a couple other people signed up, but I'm just wondering if Ben DeHaan, you're not signed up. Did you want to say something about this, or should we just move on?
He does.
You did. Please do come up. I think it probably would make sense to have you come up next. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Benjamin DeHaan. I am the current director of the Criminal Justice Policy Research Institute at Portland State University, which goes a long way, I think, to explaining why we would consider it an appropriate place to house the institute. We have an institute there by the same name that's been functioning since 1994. And we in no way would exclude from the discussions faculty and researchers from other parts of the university system. And in fact, we currently have a contract. We're working jointly with the Oregon Social Learning Center, and we have a very collegial and open relationship with the University of Oregon and other campuses. So.
Thank you. The ducks are happy.
Yeah, we're all happy.
Even though, Madam Chair, we lost the Civil War.
I don't know much about that.
That's a good thing.
The as Representative Shields said, this really is a reintroduction of Senate Bill 16, which John Minnis and Representative Max Williams were actively engaged in last session. I think it's pretty clear that the economic realities of our state would require us to consider amendments, and I would like to suggest that we do some work on this bill outside to deal with the funding question. The university, Portland State University, supports this bill, but I also have to point out that it is outside the governor's budget, and because of that, we would want to support pulling that the price tag off of it. I should say also that we are concerned about an unfunded mandate. We wouldn't want to have that full slate of responsibilities given to us minus any money. But I think there's huge advantages to the state and huge advantages to our institution to codify the relationship between the legislature, appoint the advisory board, and to move forward with the planning without the funding, because it allows me as the director of the institute to go out to other states and bring in money, as we are doing now. The institute now has about 20 or so projects that we're working. Unfortunately, my institute and institutes in other universities are forced to follow money across the country, and we end up doing work, a lot of our work in other states, not focusing in on the issues in Oregon as a result. So this would give us an opportunity to model after the Washington Public Policy Institute. We would be more persuasive on the national scene in bringing more money in to take a look at the issues that we think are important. So among the conceptual amendments that I'd like to explore would be the funding piece, certainly. Also, the governance structure, I think, could be streamlined, and we'd like to suggest that. And we also would like to be more specific about the relationships with other entities that are already doing this sort of work. The Criminal Justice Commission would be a case in point. So if it is okay with the committee, I'd suggest that we continue to work some of these conceptual amendments to be more specific, and then bring it back for you at some later date.
Thank you. We've discussed those earlier, and I'd be happy to work with you and to get something put together to bring back to the committee. I appreciate it. Are there questions from the committee or comments? Senator Pazanski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell us what is the projection as to what the cost would be if it was being fully funded at this time as the bill is currently drafted?
Senator Pazanski, Madam Chair, it's about $239,000 roughly in round numbers a year, twice
per year?
Correct.
Okay.
And that would include basic core support. Right now we're funded on a project-by-project basis, and all of you probably understand the soft money environment. So I have a spreadsheet here I could leave with you to lay out those details for you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jeff Sugarman.
Thank you. members of the committee. My name is Jeff Sugarman. I'm with the Western Prison Project. I'm in another room in the building today. The Public Safety Subcommittee is beginning hearings on the Department of Corrections budget. As most of you know, that budget under the governor's proposal is slated to increase 33% this biennium. At the same time, in today's Statesman Journal, we learned that the budget for community colleges is being cut yet again down to less than $400 million, causing tuition rates to increase at our community colleges and our universities across the state. 2 years ago, we strongly supported Senate Bill 16, and the reason then was the same that it is today. We must get a better handle on our criminal justice system. The simple truth is that corrections costs are skyrocketing at the expense of many other programs in the state. We continue to lock up more and more people, and at the same time, we're increasing the DOC budget dramatically. Funds for community corrections and programs inside our institutions are slated to be cut again. The value of this legislation is that it gives us a tool to research criminal justice issues and to find better ways of dealing with those who are convicted of crimes. Remember that 95% of the people in prison today will eventually be released, and the cost of reincarcerating them if they commit new crimes is staggering. Yet, unlike our neighbors in Washington State, we devote little resources and have little ability to judge what is working and what is not working in our corrections system. We see the value of this legislation as providing the legislature with the research and the tools you need to make the right decisions about our correction system, knowing that with the correct changes, we can both protect the public from future victimization and reallocate our tax dollars out of merely building more prisons and into reducing future crime while freeing up valuable tax dollars for education, health care, and other worthy programs that will benefit all Oregonians. We strongly support Senate Bill 240. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for the committee? Thank you. Eric Canteros? Am I learning how to spell your name correctly, or pronounce your name correctly? Did I pronounce your name correctly this time?
Close enough.
Someday I'm going to get it right.
Yeah. It's a challenge.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Terry Quinteros, and I am the Program Director for Crime Survivors for Community Safety, a program of the Western Prison Project in Portland. Crime Survivors for Community Safety came about through the consolidation of Western Prison Project and an organization known as SAFES in Portland, Survivors Advocating for an Effective System. And 2 years ago, SAFES was also in support of Senate Bill 16. Funding the Criminal and Justice Research Policy Institute is perhaps one of the most important things that Oregon can do to support survivors of crime. Survivors in crime and violence need to know that our system is not only holding people accountable for the harm that they have created, but that it is also, beyond accountability, is also trying to ensure that someone who is convicted of a crime, once released from prison, will not commit crime and violence again. We feel that this bill would help support that, help support a system to reduce recidivism within our state. And we are urging that the committee support this bill. Rather than simply stating that we are soft on crime or tough on crime, we would like for Oregon to take a stance and be smart on crime.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve Dole. Welcome to the committee. Your first appearance this session.
It is. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. For the record, my name is Steve Dole. I'm president of Crime Victims United of Oregon. We are an organization that has been in existence now for 21 years in the state, advocating for the for the rights of crime victims and for the provision of public safety and protection of society to all Oregonians. I have mixed feelings about this bill. Our organization in the past has opposed this bill because of the funding stream, because it took money out of CFAA funds, which go directly to crime victims' compensation and also to CAMI funds. Child abuse, and we did not want to see funds sacrificed that were there for the protection of children and for the protection of crime victims to be used for an institute. But given the fact that I guess this is going to be removed, there is one other continuing piece that bothers me about this bill, and I think it was evidenced today by the people that testified and by who their organizations are, and that's not saying against the organizations. They have a point of view, they have an agenda, as my organization does. But that's the point, that I don't want to see an echo chamber created at Portland State. And I had the opportunity, and I've been there before, to the Hatfield School, and I've spoken there in classes. I've been invited to speak several times. And the last time I was there, and I want to give you an example, I listened to a theory that, for instance, said that by taking people out of communities and incarcerating them after they had hurt other people, that this somehow was harmful to the community. Now, we believe that when people hurt other people in violent crimes, that when you take them out of circulation, that prevents further victimization. I mean, it's almost common sense. Yes, yet I saw all these graphs and all these charts and heard all of this academic speak, some of which I had to go home and look up in my dictionary because I didn't even recognize the words. When I finally read them, I understood what they were talking about. But the fact of the matter is if we're going to do this, then we should broaden the scope of who's able to participate and who's able to be named. Because, again, it creates an echo chamber in which the interested parties all have the same agenda and believe in the same philosophies when it comes to how we deal with criminals in our society. And just to answer Mr. Sugarman for a minute, I would remind you this, and I know some of you have heard me, who've been in the legislature for a while, have heard me say this several times, our first duty to our citizens and the first duty of government is to protect society, everything. And as much as I'm in favor of education, a lot of things we do, the first duty is to protect our citizens. And I would also say this, that I think, because it's going to be talked about a lot this session, that it mischaracterizes a little bit to state that the budget for corrections is increasing 33%. I mean, let's call this what it is. Last session, we backfilled the budget with some federal funds. And because those federal funds aren't there anymore, we're having to spend that out of general funds. So the fact of the matter is that the budget, that the corrections budget in and of itself isn't going up that much. It's the general fund that has to be backed into it. Anyway, I appreciate your time very much. Like I say, I have some mixed emotions about this thing. I hope that we can sit down with the interested parties and explore this a little bit more. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Other questions from the committee? Thank you. Okay, we will. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on this bill out there? We will close the hearing on Senate Bill 240 and open a hearing on Senate Bill. Should we hear these together?
We could do 243 first. Or we could do the quicker. The
Actually,
they'll be about the same.
Well, do we have anybody signed up on it?
Yes, we have Michael Washington, who's from the Borough Board.
Okay, we will open a hearing on Senate Bill 255 and 256. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Both these bills are attempts to make existing statutes, one providing for a life term of post-prison supervision for individuals found to be sexually violent, dangerous offenders, and the other providing for an enhanced sentence for an individual found to be a dangerous offender to comply with the decision of the United States Supreme Court in Blakely.
Thank you. We have Timothy Sylvester signed up on both of these bills. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Tim Sylvester from the Department of Justice. I'm also appearing here on behalf of Oregon District Attorneys Association. I just appearing briefly to say that we generally support the concept of these two bills, although it's not entirely clear at this point whether Blakely and Apprendi will require jury trials in these sorts of proceedings, and In fact, the Department of Justice is taking a position that likely doesn't apply to these. I think it is prudent at this point to amend these two bills to provide for a jury trial, because it may be several years until the dust settles and we're able to determine whether or not the Sixth Amendment does require jury trials. And so in the meantime, it's a good idea, I think, to amend these two statutes to include the right of jury. As I understand it, there's some other bills that are either are pending or will be pending soon that present fixes to likely issues in other statutes, and we might suggest that it would be prudent to consolidate these two bills with those. If any members of the community have questions for me, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Senator Pazansky.
Tim, thanks. Do you think we should have sunset clauses on these to revisit them, or just should we just put them in there and just wait until we see how the dust settles?
It may be, Chairman Burdick, members of the committee, Senator Pazansky, I think it may be helpful to put in sunset clauses. It also may be helpful to put in a clause that, particularly with 256 that deals with, or 255, which deals with the dangerous offender statute, to make sure that, make clear that it applies to all cases that are currently pending. And because I think there are several cases that they're going through the process right now, and it would be helpful to have this statute in place and applying to cases that currently are pending. I think that there would be no problem in having that apply to currently pending cases. I don't think that there's an ex post facto problem. And so, yes, to have a sunset clause and to have a clause that makes it specifically apply to currently pending cases.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. Committee, I'm going to hold on to these bills until we get our big Blakely bill before us, so that we can make them consistent with each other, or perhaps wrap these issue areas into the bigger bill. So since we had these, we're just so anxious to deal with Blakely on Senate Judiciary that I thought we'd just at least get the process started. We should have bills in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much.
Very much.
Are there any other people in the audience who'd like to testify? Thank you very much. We will close the hearing on Senate Bill 255 and 256 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 243. Council.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 253 is a measure that would...
43.
Excuse me, 243, I stand corrected, is a measure that would modify the conditions of post-prison supervision and parole, specifically to individuals convicted of sex crimes, and it would prohibit them from being present at places where persons under the age of 18 regularly congregate. As currently stated, the standard condition for such individuals prevents them from frequenting such places.
Thank you. We have signed up to testify on this Michael Washington. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Washington. I'm currently the chair of the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, and we're here to ask for your support of this bill, because this the wording in the statute as it is now became an issue for the board when the Oregon Court of Appeals made its ruling in the case of Brundage versus the Board of Parole. That's located at 192 Oregon Appellate 648, and that was case that came out last year. The court in that case ruled by definition that the word frequenting meant more than once, so the fact that the board had found the offender in violation, who was a convicted sex offender, of going to a school and viewing the young children at the school, the fact that we only had record of him doing that only once caused his not to violate that particular condition, because frequenting by definition means more than once. So in order to avoid that situation occurring in the future, and the fact that part of the board's mission is the protection of the public, and it's the board's position. We would not like convicted sex offenders to go to places where minors are likely to congregate at all, let alone more than once. So we felt that it was necessary that the amendment of the statute be put in place to put forth that intent.
Thank you for that explanation. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Pruzanski.
Thank you. Mr. Washington, I've read through the current statute, which is, of course, included within SB 243, and I guess I'm somewhat surprised at some of the stuff that apparently is covered already, and I wonder if you could give us some guidance or how understand that now that by making this change, it would be just on the first instance that someone goes to one of these places where, as the definition says, where a person under 18 years of age frequently congregates. So a public library. What is the is there a current prohibition from individuals who are on parole, post-prison supervision, to not go to a public library?
Not specifically. There would be, excuse me, Madam Chair, Senator Pruzanski, there's not a specific statute that prohibits them from going to a public library, and it would be up to the supervising officer to determine if that would be a location where minors are likely to congregate. And I think it's those locations that are generally known for congregation of minors, which would be like parks and elementary and middle schools and high schools, and it's been used to apply to fast food places, malls, and things of that nature. And so to answer your question, I think that a public library could apply to that definition under certain circumstances.
Thank you. Madam Chair. I'd like to get counsel or someone to look at this because I'm really concerned when I see this type of language that it may be so broad that we're going to have another challenge and the courts are going to come back and basically say it's too broadly defined, and if there's no specific guidelines as to what we mean by a place that people of this age would regularly congregate at, we might find ourselves back here in 2 years or 4 years trying to fix something. And it seems like we got this in front of us now. We should look at it because It seems like, from my reading of this, unless there's some history here of how it's being defined and who actually has that authority to make that decision and how it's actually being exercised, we may find ourselves in a situation that we're just asking for another appeal to be filed or regarding these type of conditions.
That's a good point. I was curious. You said that the parole officer is the one who determines whether that it meets the requirement, for example, where there are a lot of kids under 18 present. But what kind of appeal process, just for my education, if it's a close call, what's the process for?
Madam Chair, member of the committee, the offender is able to file an administrative review to the board if he's found in violation of this particular condition. The board will look at that and look at the rules and the laws in effect at the time that would affect that particular offender, and then issue a response. If that response doesn't provide the offender with relief, then he has a direct appeal to the Court of Appeals from that from the board's final decision.
To respond to Senator Pruzanski's concerns, do you think it would be helpful to maybe put some sideboards around this, maybe a list or a little bit more specifics? Because if you do look at this provision, it's pretty broad.
Yes, excuse me, Madam Chair, member of the committee. Yes, as it was previously written, it was fairly broad as well, and I believe that with the addition of having without the prior written approval of the supervising officer added it in, that would give the offender the options of being able to go to those places. In my experience, we've had supervising officers allowing offenders after they've been on supervision for a while to be able to attend church, to go to malls, or to even attend school functions after the supervising officer has deemed them to be safe to be at those functions.
Oh, but that's prior. Yeah, I see. Okay. Senator Pruzanski, does that explanation address your concerns, their written approval, the appeal process?
I think that's one of those things that you're setting up another potential challenge as to the discretion that that individual may have. I mean, no one wants these type of individuals associated with young people.
Right.
I mean, that's a given. You know, the way it's written right now, anyone that's convicted of any sex offense or is deemed to be a sex offender is covered by this. Even though they may not have had the conduct with a minor, they're still going to be covered by that. So that's pretty broad in itself. Then you start looking at some of these different situations. I think a public library, you could take in maybe even a video game place or where you get home movies. Some fast food type restaurants where you may have a play area and their families can go there. It's one of those things that I just see very broad stroke that could be administered by one PO as someone else may take another position. So it seemed to me that it would be best, since we have this in front of us, if council or if maybe we can just find out if there's been any cases that have actually tried to define this area or given us more guidance. It's just one of those things, when it comes across your desk, you kind of look at it and go, looks like there needs to be a little bit more work, and that's all I'm suggesting.
Okay, thank you. I think that's a good suggestion. Before we move on, does anybody else have any questions or comments on this thing? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Brzezinski, would you be willing to work with council on perhaps an approach we could look at?
Be glad to.
And when we do, Mr. Washington, we'd like you to come back.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 243. Anything left? Okay, before we go, committee, we're done with our agenda very early today.
How'd that happen?
Before we go, I have a couple of announcements. We were able to arrange with the House Judiciary Committee to have a joint meeting at our next opportunity, which is it was supposed to be March 18th, which is the Friday, but in order to meet jointly with the House, the March 17th was a better day, which is the day before, which is a Thursday, and our meeting is going to be in Pendleton, and it's going to focus on the methamphetamine issue. We're going to have experts from various locations in the treatment area and in the area of the impacts of methamphetamine on brain chemistry, et cetera, and then we will have, hopefully, the governor's package of bills to have a hearing on in Pendleton. Senator Nelson, his wife and legislative assistant, has been wonderful setting up the arrangements. We'll probably be meeting at the community college in Pendleton. So the details are going on in that, but I wanted to give you early notice. I'm plead guilty to not giving early enough notice on the last one, so I didn't want to make that mistake again. So we will be getting a memo out on that committee meeting. And also I wanted to remind you all of our meeting over at the Court of Appeals on Thursday. We will be going over there to hear two Blakely-related cases, and I believe we go at 9:30 or 10. We'll have that information tomorrow. And then they've asked us to join us for lunch on Thursday. So we will not be having Senate Judiciary Committee Thursday. We will be overhearing oral arguments on Blakely-related cases. So are there any... Senator Brzezinski.
Regarding that, since that time will be somewhat conflicting with some of us who have morning meetings, I'm assuming that there's arrangements being made with the President's office to excuse us from those committees, or do we need to do that on our own?
I think the committees are, you do on your own, but we have excuses from the floor.
Okay.
If I'm not making that up. I'll double check and make sure. I believe I signed that. Senator Byer, did you have any comments? You look okay. Good. Okay. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Those all came in as...
I didn't fall.